Hello and welcome to Pulling the Music Apart. I'm Dave. I'm joined by my siblings Norlia and Russell, along with our special guest Savas. As the name implies, we're here to analyse and dissect music. On this podcast, we'll be discussing our favourite guitar riffs or hooks. I'll start. This one is also an intro, although there is a very, very good guitar riff during the song. Sweet Child of Mine, Guns N' Roses. What do you reckon?
How could you not like it? I mean, everyone knows it. Everyone loves it. And I would be very proud if I was Axl Rose or anyone from Guns N' Roses knowing that that was our song, you know.
Or Mr. Slash himself.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Slash. What a legend.
That hook is very blues-based too, isn't it?
Oh, God, yeah. I just said it because I like it, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, Russell, your first one.
All right, well, I think everyone knows Rolling Stones, Start Me Up.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
Straight in with that one. It's just almost, it's powerful, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you didn't get those sort of powerful guitar notes often back in those days with other artists, and it just, that got me in straight away. So Rolling Stones.
Easy.
Yeah, and that made the, I think I heard somewhere that Mick Jagger would play on the guitar sometimes to just get his songs written, and then he makes the lyrics afterwards to see whatever matches.
Is that right?
The little riffs, yeah. And then if you think about the start of that song and, you know, the lyrics in it, that it's like a very funky, sexy song.
Mm.
But it's a manly kind of masculine song, isn't it?
Well, it makes grown men cry.
That's it.
Very good.
if you start them up.
Do you think he actually wrote that riff? Do you think it was Michael?
It's quite possible, but I do remember, because I find it fascinating listening to how people write songs, because some people might write a verse or a chorus verse or whatever, but I remember him saying in an interview he likes to fiddles around on the guitar and then he'll go back to lyrics later.
Well, who was the guitar player in the band?
Keith Richards.
That song is in open G tuning with one string missing. That's the way he used to play those songs. So, so that gives it that kind of powerful sound. It's very open so that he doesn't put very many fingers down. That's why it sounds, he gets those big riff sounds.
Yeah, he can still do it. I saw an interview with him, I think, which was only recorded last year.
Yeah.
And he looks like his own grandfather these days.
Yeah.
But and a lovely bloke. Just and I know we're getting off topic here, super shy.
Right.
And you see that on stage persona. And I think a lot of artists are like that. They get on stage, Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
But, just a great guitarist. Yeah. But Start Me Up.
Mm. Yeah. I feel like that band has always had such a vibe and a groove, and like it just every sound and every move Mick Jagger makes, just it's almost like his part. He's an instrument. His body is the instrument too. There's nothing like it. I don't think there's anybody else like it. If somebody tried to copy him, they would look really silly.
And still going. They released an album
still going.
Year before last.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's getting married again. I think she's about 32 years younger than him.
Oh, he's going for an older one.
The older ones, yeah.
Yeah. One of my favourite guitar hooks is Rusty Cage by Soundgarden, and I was lucky enough to actually see that live. Obviously that's not possible now because Chris has passed, but... Even just the start of that is just, I can forget about everything else when I hear the very start of that song, that riff, and the build up to it, adding all the extra guitars into it too. Now it's your turn, Savas.
Okay, I'm going to bring it back to Australia, seeing that you've taken it so far away. I'm going to talk about a band called Skyhooks and their massive song Living in the 70s, and again, an extremely iconic riff.
Yeah.
Mushroom Records' first big album that they released, and Red Simons went on to Hey Hey, It's Saturday fame. And then Skyhooks actually released a song later called Million Dollar Riff.
True.
So it seemed that having a good riff could earn you millions of dollars.
Geez, you should have gone with Million Dollar Riff. That's got a whole lot of different riffs through the whole song.
Yeah, exactly.
Weren't they a tight band?
Oh, they were insane. And coming from the era that I grew up in, Warren Dyke, Eltham Research.
Yep.
So,
well, they wrote many songs
about
referenced suburbs.
Yeah, Lygon Street, Limbo.
And yeah, Born Calling. Two Rat Cowboy.
That was a great song.
I do know a backstory to that. Greg McHanch from Skyhook spoke about that by saying we hear so many songs about, you know, Memphis and stuff like that. He's, let's make something we can understand. That's why there are so many Melbourne influences on the Living in the 70s album.
Yeah. So for our overseas listeners, this is really Melbourne-centric, this band. And they were a Melbourne band, basically. They didn't do much else, did they? Oh, no, they were national.
Yeah.
But not international.
They should have been international.
They should have been.
But
I wonder why they were.
Because he ended up, remember he did Shell's Neighbourhood with Claude the Crow.
Yeah.
Don't forget Norm the Kangaroo.
Right, yeah. And Claude the Crow was in the cubby house with him, and Claude the Crow used to collect toenails and stuff like that. They had really random conversations.
Yeah.
Well, they did try. They went to America in about 77 or 78, and they recorded an album there with some famous producer, and their sound completely changed, and I don't even think it even got released in America, and it failed here as well.
Do you think they tried too hard to produce something and rather than just do their... And they sounded like a live band to me, listening to them. They just sounded like a great pub band.
Well, according to the stories, they didn't get along well with this producer at all.
Yeah.
And he was trying to mould them into something different.
Yeah.
And the music showed that it wasn't authentic.
Just as well we get on with our producer here too.
He's authentic.
Yeah. Do you think...
Special mention to our producer too, Brad. G'day, Brad.
Yeah, hi, Brad. Hi. Do you think that David Bowie's Ziggy Stardust had a bit of an influence on, if not the music, the costumes and the attire of the band?
I think it was the whole glam scene that was coming out of England. There were other bands too, like...
There was that guy that also was not a good person.
Oh, Gary Glitter, yeah. But there were other bands too.
Sherbet.
T-Rex.
Even Early Split Ends.
Was Sherbet like that?
No.
Not so much. But were they, and correct me if I'm wrong, back in the day, Countdown, hosted by Molly Meldrum, he was dressing his artists, including AC/DC, remember that, up as women. Almost drag.
Right.
And I don't know whether he had any influence over Skyhooks in those days.
They did wear a lot of makeup.
A lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Groundbreaking.
Mm.
And all highly educated men too. I think all of them. And Sher was the tradie.
Right. He actually looked like a tradie.
And a surfer.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had that really sweet Aussie 1970s beach boy look, didn't he?
He did. How good was the drumming?
Insane.
Yeah.
Tight. Really tight. And they made it fun too. If you see them live, the drumming wasn't just some bloke keeping time. He'd actually almost get contorted standing over the kit and stand up and do some really animated movements. I'm actually doing something here. It's great for radio, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good. Nobody can see.
Just as well.
All righty.
Okay, my second riff or hook, probably one which doesn't really come out and say bada bing, that one, but I'm going with Neil Young's Old Man and the banjo riff played by James Taylor in it.
Wow.
Did he play that?
Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't know either.
And here's a little bit of history, more history for that song. Linda Ronstadt sang backing vocals on that song.
Yep.
Yeah, so a lot of big stars on that one.
Oh, geez, you go to the whole Harvest album, all-star cast, Linda Ronstadt, James Taylor, Nicolette Larson.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
What an amazing artist too. Yeah. And do you know his wife has produced a film based on his career? Daryl Hannah is his wife.
Is she?
Yeah.
Who?
You know Daryl Hannah? She was a mermaid or something in a movie.
Splash. I love that movie.
I think all the boys loved Daryl Hannah back then.
Oh, I think so. Wasn't she married to Jackson Browne for a while as well?
I don't know, maybe she liked musos.
And Daryl's a girl.
And what a girl, yeah.
And honestly, I think there's a movie that's coming out very soon. I've seen it advertised.
Yeah.
Hmm.
What's the movie about?
About Neil Young.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's produced it and it's all about his career.
Wow.
And there's a lot of performances.
What are they calling it? That Neil Old?
Yeah, no, great musician. Nutbag of a person, but a great musician.
Yeah. No, no relation to the Youngs from AC/DC.
Surprisingly, no. What about your next one, Russell?
Okay, I think it's from their first album and the self-titled Boston and More Than a Feeling.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just an amazing song. And it starts with a fade in. Okay, if you listen to it, it starts off quiet and then it gets a little into the song. And that was actually recorded in one of the players' basements. True story. And the record label said, no, we'll take this to the studio and do it the normal way. And they said, nope. And the whole album, bar, I think the last track was recorded in their basement. Amazing. But More Than a Feeling. And the hook that I'm referring to in that one is referenced in another song by Hunters and Collectors, and that would be Holy Grail.
Oh. And a song by Hoodoo Gurus called Less Than a Feeling. The same thing. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But an amazing song, an amazing group. And ahead of their time, I think it was about 75, 76.
And 76, yeah.
And they were, I reckon they created that 80s power chord sound, which we didn't hear until the 80s.
Mm. It's funny that you say that, Russ, about recording in their basement, you know, and then the producer's going, why don't we do it in a big studio? Because sometimes it's more about the performance rather than the production, the quality.
Yeah.
Like Kiss's first album, they recorded it as a demo and then they got taken to Electric Ladyland to record it properly and reproduce, and the demo sounds better.
It
lost its character. Yeah. So sometimes it's not always the quality, it's the performance. So, yeah.
Well, you know, they pushed back really hard against that one too.
Mm.
And it was, it's either in our basement or not at all.
And they were right.
Yeah, weren't they? That's mine.
I'm going to go back to 1980 now. With a bit of a kind of eccentric intro turning into a wonderful riff. I'm actually going to give our listeners a clue before I say what it is.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get my brother to make the sound for the vocals because he'll know straight away what it is. Doo-doo, doo-doo, doo-doo. Doo doo.
I.
Yeah, so Crazy Train, Ozzy Osbourne, I had that song playing pretty much in my car on my cassette player.
and one randy guitar player.
Yeah. That was just, I love that whole album.
Yeah.
But what an awesome, awesome riff.
Have you still got the cassette?
No, I do not have the cassette. I don't. In fact, yeah, it makes me sad sometimes to not play cassettes and records or even CDs now.
You've got that new Fandangle thing, haven't you? Yeah, CD.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the new Fandangle, yeah. But
I've got a CD stacker in my car.
Does it bring?
Yeah, I'm bragging now. So,
you were always the cool brother. Does that bring back memories for you guys being my senior? I know Savas is the same age as me, so I know what we were getting up to when that song was playing. What about you guys? Because 1980, how old were you in 1980?
20. Okay. Oh, geez, I don't know. I was pretty young at the time. No, 1980, I was 14.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go.
We were spoiled for choice, though, and you – I know that music – engenders memory, smell engenders memory, but you're thinking back to what you're doing at the time. I mean, for me, the songs of 1978, I was 18, I just got my license, and it represented
Freedom.
Freedom. Mm. And all those songs that you were playing on your mono car speaker, listening to AM radio, as it were. It's, yeah, that's powerful.
Sure is.
So what does it bring back for you guys? Your,
well,
can you tell us? Or?
Okay. Well, just going back to that song, mm-hmm. Crazy Train, a lot of people probably don't know this, but the bass player of the Ozzy Osbourne band, which was originally called The Blizzard of Oz, was Bob Daisley, who's Australian. And actually he wrote 80% of the lyrics on that album, and he was not credited. And he went through a 20-year lawsuit with Ozzy and Sharon Osbourne to try to get credit rights.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's a crazy train. But, yeah, Bob Daisley was with Ozzy for a long time, and the band was actually going to be called Blizzard of Oz, and they called it Ozzy Osbourne because of his legacy, and there was a lot of infighting in the band. But regardless of that, the music was unbelievable.
Blizzard of Oz, A-U-S?
Yes, O-double-Z
yeah.
was going to be, yeah.
But he was Australian, so it should have been A-U-S.
Also, getting back to what were we getting up to when that song came out, we were seven, so nothing.
Yeah.
I was still playing with dolls. It wasn't until we got to about 20 that we started listening to that
yep.
and really getting into it, because sometimes we'd go to a place called the Cat House, remember that, in St Kilda?
I do.
And they played lots of heavy metal, lots of old rock and some progressive stuff as well. So we kind of got a reboot, I think. You know, right. we just started to discover that music and how cool it was.
Well, I think what rebooted it for me for Ozzy was in 1990 he released an album called Osmosis.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I really got into that. And what happens is you get into a band and you think, I want to go back to their back catalogue.
Yeah.
And you keep on going right back. Then you go, oh, my God, he was in a band called Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
Which I'm going to talk about next.
Mm.
And you kind of rediscover the back catalogue.
Tell us more about that.
Right. Yeah, well, my riff is going to be Black Sabbath, Iron Man.
Iron Man.
Yeah, oh, yes.
I am Iron Man. And
yes.
Tony Iommi is the guitar player. And I think he needs a mention in this episode because he is the riff king. He's known as the riff master.
And for a bloke who lost the tips of two of his fingers.
the day that he was going to leave his day job to become a musician.
Yeah.
Yeah, talk about, you know, bad luck. But he put those
thimbles
on for sewing, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And he still puts them on to play guitar and modified the guitar with super light strings and tuned it down. And that now became that evil kind of heavy metal sound. So, yeah.
Hey, how did he lose his fingertips?
In a cutting machine, sliced them off.
Was he a baker?
No, he was working in a factory, like cutting cords or pipes, and his fingers went in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Like
he wasn't very good at doing that, though, was he?
Obviously, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah. Over to you, David.
Okay, and my one takes me back to a time where, you know, I'd get on my Malvern Star push bike. Listen to 3XY. Black Betty, Ram Jam.
Right.
What a hook on that song.
Yeah.
It even starts that way.
Yeah, it does.
1977.
Yeah.
It's timeless. It's an evergreen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Spiderbait covered it, yeah?
They did, yeah.
Yep.
They did a damn good version of it too.
Yeah, they did.
Didn't have the same hook to it though.
No.
Nah.
But rebooted it.
Yeah. Reimagined, let's say that.
Reimagined, that's a better word.
What album did that come off, the Spiderbait album? Apple and the Poison Ivy?
Yeah, it's the one that had Don't You Wanna Be
right.
Personality,
yeah.
I think.
And which town were they from?
So it, was it New South Wales or
Melbourne? Yeah, when you drive up to Queensland, you'll pass through it. Is it called Finley? It's a tiny little town. With like a population of like 300-400 people, and that's where they came from, all three of them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Obviously they left to become famous.
There's a town just up the road from where we live called Little River.
Yep.
And the Little River Band didn't come from there.
Right.
No.
They were just driving past and thought, well, what a great name for a band.
Yeah. Well, they drove past.
Yeah. 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 I was probably driving to Geelong and they thought, what are we going to name ourselves? A Little River Band?
Little Geelong
Band. Or maybe they drove past a river and it was little.
Nah, it was that one. It's that town.
Oh, okay.
Actually, is the story, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And fun fact, there's no river, Little River.
Yeah. Oh, it's so little you can't see it.
I was just about to say that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Led Zeppelin, again, Whole Lot of Love.
Yep.
Can I sing it?
Yep.
That's not the part of the song I was thinking of. No, it is. once again, instantly recognisable. You'd probably hear the first half of one beat and know what that song is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyone else have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do, because that's another riff where as soon as I hear it, I see Robert Plant in my head with his shirt either off or unbuttoned all the way down and his hair going crazy and him just becoming like a one of those vocal instruments. And you can't imagine Led Zeppelin without him. It's just he's like Mick Jagger with Rolling Stones.
A lot of his groupies saw that too.
Oh. Yeah, well, we won't talk about that. Because, what was okay back then is not okay now.
No, it's not. I agree.
Well, I think what's amazing about that song is you can't wait for the riff to come back again. Mm. So you've got that whole interlude with all the echoes and crazy stuff. And you go, come on, bring that riff back. And when it kicks back in again after the drum solo, it's just, yes.
Were there some guitar work with a violin bow in
that's
that one?
That's correct. Mm. Yeah.
Has that been done before?
Well, I think it's just an expensive habit of ripping horsehair against metal.
I mean, we all heard what the effect was.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I saw some vision of one of their concerts.
Yes.
I think it's a violin bow.
The song remains the same, the movie. Yeah. You see him doing it in the movie, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's a new sound, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, imagine going to a record company and saying, we're going to release this song and it's got like a 3-minute echo bizarre interlude. So they must have trusted them to release it.
And as with a lot of Led Zeppelin stuff, the stereo left-right stuff was prevalent in that song too. Mm. They loved that stuff. And that's something you don't hear a lot of these days.
And Jimmy Page produced it as well as he played the riff. And
What
a talent.
Yeah, and still going.
Yep. Mm. That must be in his 80s, I'd say.
I think he's pushing 80.
Yeah.
Now, is this a fact, and I can be proven wrong, when John Bonham, their drummer, iconic drummer, passed away in 1980,
correct.
Is it true that as a tribute to Bonzo, that they'd never play Stairway again? Stairway to Heaven.
Well, they played it at Live Aid in 85.
Did they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Phil Collins played drums on it.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Phil Collins played drums on lots of songs people don't know about.
Yeah. He doesn't play drums now.
No.
Well, his son plays drums.
He was the only person to ever perform at both Live Aids.
He got on the Concorde.
He got on the Concorde and flew from Wembley to the United States and played in New York. He played at both Live Aids.
Oh, what a legend.
On the same day.
What a legend. Oh, he's amazing.
We need a Concorde again.
Yeah, bring it back.
Yep. Okay, so my final favourite riff is, everyone knows, Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana.
Yep.
That represented a whole new genre of music. Really, even that riff. And I don't know, what do you guys think?
Wasn't that, that's a cover, isn't it? Because I think Weird Al did the original version.
Oh, very funny.
Well, the riff is really, if you play it slowly, it pretty much is the same chords and rhythm to Purple Haze.
Yeah.
But no, it's amazing. I think it was more the sound and the attitude.
And the, what do you call it? You know, the distortion on the guitars. Mm. That kind of grunge era began, but it was just, that guitar riff is kind of everything.
And I think it was tail-ending that era when they had kick-ass video clips to go with songs. Mm-hmm. That's something that seems to have
disappeared over the years.
I feel like it was a low budget video clip though, because for that song
it worked.
Yeah, they blurred it. They blurred, so the blurred vision in the video clip, the band playing kind of matched the distortion of the guitars.
Yeah.
So you got all your senses going, and then you have the grungy kind of look, and oh, it was just amazing.
Well, I'll give you a question, Nolia.
Yes.
There's a bit of a connection between Nirvana and the band Garbage.
Okay. Nirvana and the band Garbage. Garbage,
yeah. A member of Garbage has a connection to the band Nirvana.
Right, okay.
Butch Vig, who formed Garbage, was the producer.
Oh, okay. That Nevermind. I didn't know.
And the way he got those guitar sounds, they mic'd up the amps at like 10 or 11 as far as they could go, and they just recorded them extremely loud.
Wow.
And that got that over-compressed sound. That's how they got those really, really big sounds.
Wow. But
Butch Vig was the producer of the Nevermind album and got all those big guitar sounds.
How interesting you should say that, because if you think about it, those sounds and producers and the impact they have on the artist and that and how it can impact the sound so much. You know, Mutt Lange, who he produced, now he produced Def Leppard, especially that Hysteria album.
Hysteria.
Yep. The sound production on that album is insane. It's excellent. And he also produced his ex-wife's Shania Twain's album. And then if you think about Shania Twain's quality of her production, now I'm going to flip over to The Cause. He also produced The Cause album.
And some AC/DC as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Foreigner.
Yeah, there you go. But even though they were all very different bands, you can hear that sound quality through all of those bands is exactly where it needs to be. You know, it's amazing.
Right, yeah, I think he was going for that anthemic sound, you know, just you listen to it and it was just like being in a stadium.
Can you say that again? That's a good word.
Anthemic.
Yeah, anthemic it is.
I love it.
Word of the day, anthemic. Thank you, Savas.
Name of the episode, anthemic.
I love it.
All right, I'll do my final one, and it is probably one of the most iconic riffs ever, Smoke on the Water, Deep Purple.
Yep.
Geez, I'd call it anthemic.
Anthemic, absolutely. Richie Blackmore on guitar. And, you know, it was one of those songs that growing up being a guitar player, you weren't allowed to play in guitar stores because everyone did it. It was pretty much a sign. Smoke on the Water, prohibited.
Yes.
And please don't play Stairway to Heaven.
Yes.
That's right. Oh, that was in Wayne's World too.
Yeah, Wayne's World was, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Over to you, Dave.
Yeah, that one really stands out.
Yeah.
Good choice there, Savas. Well, that's it for this episode. If you have any questions or just like to leave a comment, feel free to reach out to us on Instagram at Pulling the Music Apart. Our next episode is almost ready, so please stay tuned for some release. Until then, keep listening to the music. Thanks for tuning in.